channel. Let's discuss our journey of self-discovery, joy, presence, and living with authenticity. We can create positive change in the world, and it starts within each one of us. Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Mondays at noon on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver. Hello and welcome to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. Thanks for being with me today. This is CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, or you might also be listening in Kamloops at CFBX, or in Nova Scotia at Axe Radio Canada, or online at CITR.ca, CosmicDimensions.com, EmpowerRadio.com, or on the Co-Creator Network. And today we have Michael Mead on the show, and he's going to be speaking in Vancouver at Banyan Books coming up in just a few days. So before we bring him on the show, though, I just want to remind you that we have our funding drive coming up very soon, and I'm going to be giving away, there's going to be a draw for a one-night stay at the amazing Opus Hotel in Yale Town for anyone who donates $50 or more, and I have a couple copies, electronic Kindle copies of One Great Year, which we talked about a few weeks ago on the show, and I'm working on getting some more prizes, so I hope that you will be tuning in, and we're going to have Surya Devi on the show playing some music and singing, and we'll probably do some duets like we always do because I can't stop myself from singing when she's here in studio. So please tune in for the funding drive, and you can always check out my Facebook page. I'll be posting a link if you want to just donate online and get a tax receipt at facebook.com/spiritualshow. So please do join me there. And welcome to the show, Michael Mead. How are you doing?
Good, Marie. Thank you.
Good. So you are coming to Vancouver to speak at Banyan Books. And are you going to be speaking about your book, Why the World Doesn't End?
Yeah, there's a Friday night talk. I don't think it's at the bookstore. It's actually at, it might be Unitarian Church. I don't know. They have that information. And that's about Why the World Doesn't End, which is like the big story. I call it the eternal story of the world, which has its dramatic changing points, which we're in the midst of, but it really doesn't come to an end. And then there's a workshop on Saturday about the genius in one's life. And what I've been writing about and talking about is the two stories that are essential to the world. One, the eternal drama of the cosmos, and the other, the unique story of each person's life. And so to me, if you're addressing those two things, you're in a way addressing everything. And there's a way in which the unique story of each person's life secretly connects to the eternal drama of the world. And so there's connections between the two.
Okay, so what's up with the eternal drama of the world? Because drama is not really a good thing. When we say drama, it's usually like because it's challenging or ridiculous, or people are making a big deal out of nothing. So when you say the eternal drama of the cosmos, what do you mean?
Well, I mean the big story. So a story without drama is not a story. You know, you say, well, there was a beautiful little girl, and then she grew up a little bit, and she learned to read and write, and then she had a puppy and she played with, and then she got big enough to go out on her own, and then she got married, and then... And that's not a... Without drama, there's no story. There's a little girl, and then she experienced certain shocks or certain things occurred that made her realize, wow, life at home wasn't the whole world. And all of a sudden, now you're in her drama, and her drama is embedded in the big drama. So I'm using drama in its original sense. What's the old idea? The soul has a drama it wants us to live through.
Hmm.
So the people that are saying, well, get rid of the drama, are also, in a way, saying get rid of the world.
Wow. That's a big statement. Interesting. I've never looked at it that way before.
Yeah. If you think of drama, it's the references to theater. You go to the theater, nowadays maybe it's a movie theater, or maybe it's your monitor, to see some interesting drama. And all real stories are about change. Hopefully, you know, the best ones are about transformation and growth, but they're all about change. And so if you then take the idea back a little bit before the internet and so on, then you're actually going to a stage like the Globe Theatre in England. And of course, Globe is not an accidental name. They're referring to the cosmos. I've been in the Globe Theatre. I've been on the stage. And when you look, when you're on stage and you look up, the whole cosmos is in the concave arc above your head while you're on stage.
Wow.
So you say, remember Shakespeare, all the world is but a stage and we are players on it. All the world is but a living drama of exquisite intrigue and we are but the players on it. And so the issue is, I think, to become the primary player in the drama that's inevitably going to draw people into life. The old word for the main characters in a play was protagonists, the ones who are carrying the drama forward, and all the secondary characters were called, I forget the Greek word, but anyway, what it meant was people not living authentically.
Hmm.
So when we're in the real story of our life, we're in an authentic drama. And I heard in the introduction the idea that by being living positively, in a sense, a person could affect the course of the world. And the only thing I would change about that, by living authentically, a person can be in a position to affect the course of the world. But if it was easy, or simply positive, everybody would have already done it, and we wouldn't have any drama. But if we didn't have any drama, it wouldn't be that interesting. I mean, people sometimes want to blame Adam and Eve, maybe Eve a little more than Adam, but if they hadn't grabbed that apple and broke the rule, none of us would even be here. So it starts with a little drama.
Hmm. That's a very interesting perspective. Thank you. So now when you're talking about everyone's unique story in the workshop that you're doing on the Saturday,
yep.
I'm going to have to look up on the website so we can get the exact dates and times, because I feel like that's important to let people know. But what specifically are you going to be working with people on, like being authentic in their lives?
Yes. So I think the title is Finding Genius in Your Life. So the first thing we have to do is figure out what's genius, and it's a Latin word that means the spirit that's already there. And of course, it has nothing to do with IQ. The modern world thinks the genius is anyone with an IQ over 130. I'm not sure what number they're using currently, but that's an intelligence quotient. But the genius quotient is about the unique characteristics that a person brings to the world. You could call it their gifts. And those things are manifold. Some, you have people that learn primarily through the body, and what they have to give is sensate. Well, you can't measure that with an intelligence quotient. You have people like bhakti people who are devotional. It's very hard to measure devotion, and yet it's a really necessary thing, especially for people whose genius is devotion. And so I'm going to be talking about the different ways to figure out what a person's genius is, and just to say that the genius manifests several times in life before a person gets to be, like, say, 20 years of age. It will manifest, but often in a way that the family didn't appreciate or didn't want, or in a way that doesn't fit into school or doesn't follow the rules, because genius won't follow the rules. So sometimes a person has to revision their story in order to see how their genius was trying to come into their life. And I'm working on the principle that everyone in essence has genius. And genius is what we give, what we have to give to each other and what we have to give to the world. And the genius actually knows, in a sense, where the purpose of our life can best be found.
Hmm. Okay, well, I want to put out the information because I'm on your website here, which is mosaicvoices.org. And so your talk about Why the World Doesn't End is in Vancouver at the Unitarian Church of Vancouver on Friday, February 22nd at 7 p.m. And you can get more information and tickets from Banyan Books. And I'm sure everyone listening to the show knows where Banyan is. But if you don't, it's on West 4th near Is it Alma? And Finding Genius in Your Life is going to be the next day, Saturday, February 23rd, from 9:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. And is that at Banyan Books?
No, that's at, I think it's called, it might be the Peace Memorial Center.
Okay.
I've been there once before. It's a nice little venue, just on the west side, I guess you would call it, up from, seems to me, I remember driving up from 4th Avenue, so it's up in a kind of neighborhood, but it's a nice center, and I'm pretty sure it's the Peace Memorial Center, something like that.
Okay. Well, people can find more information through Banyan Books, and yes. Again, that's Saturday, February 23rd from 9:30 to 5:30. So are you wanting everyone to come to the Friday evening talk, and then are you going to give more details about the Finding Genius in Your Life?
Yeah, it'll come up. In other words, I've written two books in the last few years, and I did it on purpose. One is Why the World Doesn't End, and I wanted to publish that before the kind of crescendo of the Mayan calendar kind of ideas, and before the election in the United States and so on like that, these big things that people would think that were catastrophic. And then prior to that, I had written a book called Fate and Destiny, and that's about fate is what inevitably restricts a person's life, usually not by choice. It can be genetics. It can be a family kind of issue. It can be a psychological issue. It can be an accident. Fate is what falls on us. And then destiny is like our destination, the passionate direction of our soul and the place we're trying to get to. Some might call it enlightenment. Others could call it fulfillment. There's lots of names for it. And that book is about how the twist of fate involves a thread that if a person faces the trouble in their life, then the thread takes a turn and leads them towards their destiny. So I'm taking a very positive view of life and saying that inside the worst things is where the golden stuff is hidden.
Okay, well, I want to talk more about that, but it's time for a break, so we will be back with more Synchronicity in a moment. I am your host, Marie Bernard. This is CITR, and we are speaking right now with Michael Mead, and you can find him at mosaicvoices.org. He's coming to Vancouver Friday, February 22nd, and February 23rd, so you can find more information about his engagements and where that's going to be through Banyan Books. We'll be back with more Synchronicity in a moment.
Now repeat after me. Bugger off. Bugger off. Sod. Sod. Bloody. Bloody. Now put them all together. Bugger off, you bloody sod.
Bugger off, you bloody sod.
Okay, you're in.
Let's smash things up!
Every Saturday from noon to 1 p.m., listen to Generation Annihilation on CITR 101.9 FM, UBC Radio in Vancouver.
Born in Halifax, Nova Scotia, Faith Nolan is an award-winning singer-songwriter, film producer, and ardent advocate for social justice. Her music and politics are one and the same, both firmly entrenched in her experiences as a queer woman of African, Mi'kmaq, and Irish heritage, raised in the working-class neighborhood of Regent Park, Toronto. Over the course of her career as a musician, she has recorded 14 albums, the most recent of which, Hang On Cupe, was released in 2009. For more information about the Queering Black History 2011 recipient, Faith Nolan, go to her website at www.faithnolan.org. And now, a selection from Faith's music, a track titled, Where Can I Run?
Where can I run? Where can I hide? You stole my body, now you're torturing my mind. You come in the night, when my eyes close. Scream and run for my life, you're the nightmare in
This PSA was brought to you in support of Black History Month on CITR 101.9 FM.
The World of Wine is back in town for the 35th annual Vancouver International Wine Festival, February 25th to March 3rd. 55 amazing events featuring 175 wineries from 15 countries. Don't miss the latest and greatest vintages. Tickets on sale now at vanwinefest.ca.
Welcome back to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and we are speaking today with Michael Mead. Welcome back to the show, Michael.
Thank you very much, Marie.
Hi. So we're talking about the drama of your life and the struggles. So let's talk about struggles, because I notice sometimes that there's so many different ways that people deal with struggles. And then you find sometimes when people have these sheltered lives that they grow up, not always, but sometimes, with this sense of entitlement. And yeah, and other people who have had just nothing but struggle are so much more grateful for everything they have. So can we talk about how you view struggle and how you teach people to deal with it?
Yeah, thank you for the framing that. So my, you know, our website is mosaicvoices.org, nonprofit organization through which we work with severely at-risk youth, gang youth, and homeless youth. We work with veterans returning back from war, lately Iraq, Afghanistan, and so on. And we work with refugees, and we work with people in prison as well. And we work with anybody when they're in their struggle. And one reason for that is, first of all, it's just a righteous thing to do, to help people who are suffering more than oneself. But secondly, people change when they're struggling. You know, no one has ever changed while resting on a couch, in a sense. A person changes when they enter meaningful struggles. And the meaningful struggles can be, at least the way I'm describing it, something that falls upon a person. They get attacked, or they have a sudden loss, a death in the family, something like that, that puts the soul in struggle. But also the kind of struggles that happen when a person chooses to go on a meaningful path, a spiritual path or a path of great learning, then that path will have struggles. Otherwise, no learning will occur. If everything is smooth, then nothing has changed. And so I have come, after years of experience of working with all kinds of people in trouble, including myself, to the conclusion that sometimes it's good to go looking for trouble. What I call the right trouble. When a person is in the right trouble, they are poised to really grow or even transform.
Okay, well, now I really like the idea of looking for trouble. That amuses me greatly. But I am curious. I mean, how do you help people? Because sometimes when I'm in struggle, it's really hard. In hindsight, you can always say, oh, yeah, I learned so much from that struggle, and, you know, I'm probably even better off because of it. But when you're in the middle of it, it's really hard to have that perspective. And I know for myself, I can get sad and depressed and find myself like, gosh, I'm so negative sometimes. So how do you help people? Or maybe is that negativity part of the journey?
Well, I think the division into positive and negative is a little overdone, because seemingly negative things, you know, can have a very positive result. For some reason, Buddha came into my mind. You think of the story of Buddha, who is often seen in a very positive way, but he only became the Buddha. He was Siddhartha, an entitled prince raised within a wealthy, powerful family that never let him go out and see the world until he was 29. And then he finally leaves, and he heads for the marketplace, which is, you know, representative of the drama of the world. And he sees a sick person, a poor person, and a corpse. And all of a sudden, he realizes life is suffering. That's exactly what he says. And it's when he decides to go through that further that he becomes the Buddha. So if a person were to say follow the Buddha or follow Jesus or Muhammad or, you know, Lao Tzu, take your choice, what you find is someone who gets into profound difficulty and feels in some strong depth the pain and suffering of life, who then finds a way through it that is unique or unusual. And those are the people we follow, but we can only follow them so far because there comes a day when we have to make the next step ourselves, and that's what they used to call the pathless path, the path that a person makes when they have reached the kind of struggle that's trying to provoke from them their real essence. And I'm suggesting or following the old idea that a person's real essence is genius, is beautiful, is meaningful, and is capable of healing oneself and bringing healing to the world.
So when you're talking about these people who have gone out looking for the right type of trouble, Mother Teresa comes to mind. But then it's my feeling is I don't want to live a life like that. I do want to help people. I want to grow. I want to make the world a better place. And yet at the same time, there are certain things that I want for myself. Like, she was completely selfless and got herself into some amazingly challenging situations, and just gave up so much. And what if you don't want to be a martyr? How can you still give to the world and have that struggle?
Right. Well, I'm a recovering Catholic, and so I'm really not suggesting martyrdom for anyone. I think that's a mistake, where what happens is a person removes their self too soon and doesn't really arrive at the place where they get to give the gift that they've been carrying since before birth. Mother Teresa is a great story, but not everybody. For some reason, I'm having Buddhist thoughts, and the Buddhists, borrowing a little bit from the Hindus, call that the road of Dharma, where you simply serve something greater than yourself with everything you have. And not everybody's on that Dharma path. There are people that have to be more in the world, you know, the phrase in the world but not of it. In order to be in the world and not of it, you have to first be in the world. And for some people, that's their path. And whereas other people can live in a cloister and they do their prayers for everyone outside while they stay inside. And then others, you know, have to be in the dance of life. They're more in the, let's call that the ecstatic road. And so there are roads that are actually calling to a person. So what I do is I connect the idea of one's genius hidden inside oneself with the calling that's trying to call it out of us and awaken us. And so a person awakens and they live on the road they happen to be on. And it's the key thing, I think, is that it's unique. So when we see Mother Teresa, we're seeing a unique person. By the way, her diaries were published, and she was in anguish a good deal of the time. She felt like she was doing the wrong thing, maybe, or not giving enough, or not giving in the right way. And so there's a tendency to idealize and idolize, which in itself is a good thing so far. In other words, we have idols and ideal people that we say, I want to be like her, I want to be like him, because I see something shining in them. But eventually, we have to let that image go and find how that shining actually is in us.
I love that. So I'm curious to know about your struggles. And also, I want to put out the number, if anyone wants to ask you a question, 604-822-2487. We're speaking with Michael Mead today, and he's coming to Vancouver on February 22nd and 23rd. If you want to attend his talk on the Friday night or attend his workshop, you can get more information at Banyan Books. And so again, the number is 604-822-2487. I'm really curious about, I want to know about your struggle and what brought you to this point, if you can give us sort of a summary of that and your path. And also, when you talk about the unique story and finding your unique genius, I'm hoping that you can share a couple little tidbits, because we do have listeners from all over the world who might not be able to come and see you in Vancouver. So where would you like to start, Michael?
Another good question. So I think what happened to me, and this is something I've had to reflect on and figure out about, when I was 13, well, two things happened. One is my aunt gave me a book and for my birthday, and as I was tearing the cover off of it, she said, oh, no, it's the wrong book. She had asked me what I was interested in, and I said, history. She went to the bookstore and asked for a history book. They pointed to an upper shelf. She was a very short Irish woman, and in reaching up, apparently grabbed the wrong book, had it wrapped. She, upon seeing the cover coming off, is saying, oh, give it back. It's the wrong book. I'll take it back. I'm looking at this beautiful cover with the flying horse Pegasus, you know, going across the sky, and an archer sitting on the horse aiming an arrow back towards the spine of the book, and I'm going, no, I want this book. And she's saying, it's the wrong book, and I said, no, I want it. And then I tear the rest of the paper off, and it says Mythology by Edith Hamilton. So the wrong thing is the right thing. The mistake turns out to be the gift, and I find out on the night of my 13th birthday, I find the language that my life is about, because my life turns out to be about myth and story. But within 6 months, I'm growing up in New York City, growing up poor, running the streets, and I joined this local gang. That's what you had to do at the time in order not to be picked on by all the gangs. And I wind up in a complicated bit of a story, trapped in the bathroom of a movie theater, surrounded by seven guys with knives who are about to carve me up because of some perceived insult.
Wow.
Yeah. And I'm laying there, my little 13-and-a-half-year-old self, going, whoa, you know, I didn't know this would be such a short adventure, when all of a sudden a voice inside me starts telling a story to these guys. And they are so disarmed, let's say, that they forget to hurt me and wind up letting me go. And now I'm walking around the streets of New York realizing...
Well, hold up a second. Can I hear a little bit of this story?
Well, so the story, I didn't tell them a story from, you know, the mythology book, but from the mythology book I had had the storyteller in me awakened. And so and it wasn't even me. It's like my ego departed. It didn't want to get stabbed and everything. It was going to get out of there. So what was left was, you could say, an aspect of the genius in a way, or the inner spirit, that started to spin a tale out of what we were living through. Because I started, they were not after me. They were after my friend because he had insulted them, but they couldn't find him, so I was the next closest thing. And I was saying, well, you can't really blame him because he's crazy. He's out of his mind. And the reason he's out of his mind is because his brother beats him every day and his father beats him every night. And so he's gone kind of crazy. And so he's not actually trying to insult you. If he had his wits about him, he wouldn't do that, because look how dangerous you are. He's actually lost his mind. Well, the intelligence of the story that just erupted was that we were all being beaten. That was the problem. We were living this life, which nowadays they call somewhat abusive, where you know, you get beaten because everybody's suffering so much. And so I was really telling them not just my friend's story, but their story. And hearing their story would be like a psychological awakening, stunned them just enough to let me go, to kind of say, oh, yeah, that's right, we're all getting hurt, so you can go.
Wow.
So, and then I'm 13 and a half. I know something. I really know something. But I couldn't get anybody to pay attention to what I knew, because it didn't make sense. Everybody was busy following what was in the newspaper or being taught at school. So it took me years to find. same meaning. The spirit that we were born with, that there's, you could say a person is a spirit embedded in the soul around which a body is wrapped. And in the course of life, various things happen that cause a kind of peeling back or stripping down, the purpose of which is not just mistreatment, I think, and this is what's in all the myths. The purpose of it is to reveal the hidden gem, the hidden gold, the inner genius, to reveal it. And once we have a connection to it, then we have a deeper, intuitive, non-abstract sense of what it is we are wrapped around and what it is that gives us our essence and what it is that makes us unique and what it is that can lead us on a meaningful path through the world. When a person is in touch with that, they're beneficial, for the most part, to their neighbors as well. But I should mention that the genie is not a human element, and so, as they used to say, the first problem is you don't know what your genius is, and the second problem is you know what your genius is, because now you have to live with it.
Hmm. Yeah, that's another challenge, because what if you have an idea of what your purpose is in the world, but you don't know how to take the action steps to actually make it happen?
Well, sometimes it's not knowing, but more often it's fearing. That, at least I would say in my own case, it's a fear of not living a big enough life, which has nothing to do with fame and stuff. It means inhabiting one's life fully. Because the other thing is the genius is connected to, nowadays they'll call it your passion. What's your real passion? Well, when you find your real passion, you become a passionate person, and a person has to expand the sphere of their life in order to make room for the passion. And so then people have fears like, oh, what if everybody judges me a certain way? Or what if everybody thinks I'm full of myself? Or what if everybody thinks that I'm acting better than them? So there's a little bit of a danger in the sense that especially those people who are distinctly unaware of their own genius, their own passion, and their own purpose in life, will often, out of envy or whatever, diminish the person who has found their genius. And so there's the fears of, what if I do it wrong? There's the fears of, what if everybody attacks me? It's usually fear that keeps us from living. And if you remember, fear and love tend to be opposed. And so the genius has to do with what we really love in life and in each other.
So in your workshop, are you going to be working on how people can overcome that fear once they realize once they've found their genius? And are people going to find their genius that day?
Yes.
Okay, so once they found their genius.
Not everybody, but it just happens because it's as if life wants us to find the genius. That's one way to understand trouble. And so sometimes it's just a matter of being in a room where that's what the consideration is. Sometimes you do various exercises in the workshop. It comes out in a conversation, and then I tell stories that are really, these mythic stories which provoke the deep mythic qualities of one's life. And so the idea is to become acquainted with one's genius, or to become better able to live with it. I call it the territory of genius. We'll go into the territory, and there's lots of stuff to see in that territory. And then the beauty of life and the trouble of life is that each person is unique. That's both the wonder and the problem.
So, Michael, that brings up another question for me. I'm curious, because you had mentioned that before age about 20, I think you said, people will go through their finding their genius like numerous times. So is it different unfoldings? Like you might discover one aspect of your genius at, age 15, and then at age 30, it might still have a similar theme, but it's looking like completely different.
Yes, exactly. So I just happen to have been working with a group of women who are part of an extensive network called Threshold Choirs. I don't know if you're familiar with them or if they are in Vancouver at this point, but there's over 130 of them in North America. And it's women who a little later in life, realized that part of what they loved was to sing, but they don't see that singing as part of the entertainment industry. Rather, they have gotten the idea, it's like the return of an old idea, that they should join together and sing to people as they're dying. So it's like hospice singing, or they call it threshold choirs, and it's stunningly beautiful. They sing these melodic, beautiful hymns, in a sense. It's non-denominational, but it's like hymns to a person as they die, and it's just amazing. And so in a way, you could say that they are reviewing and reconnecting to their genius later on, when in their maturity and life experience, they realize that their singing gift is to be given, but not necessarily into the marketplace of life, but rather into the threshold where life and death are exchanged.
Wow.
Does that help with that?
I just Googled it, and Threshold Choir, there is one in Vancouver/Sunshine Coast. So yeah, if you want to Google it, that's awesome.
Isn't that beautiful? That's one of so because I'm interested in this kind of thing and I talk about it and so on, I wind up hearing about what amazing things people are doing. And so these are the things that are below the, you know, the kind of cultural vision, but they're erupting from the ground, and in this case, you know, from the funeral ground. And imagine it, and so the amazing thing, and I've spent a lot of time with these groups. They had like a conference, and I worked with them at that conference because I've studied funerals of different cultures and stuff. And here are, in this case, women who actually are happier, first of all, because they're giving their gift, which is coming through their voice, but it's all they're happy at being present at the moment of death. It seems so counterintuitive, but if it's how your genius is inclined, then it makes the most sense. So that the person who has a good dose of Mother Teresa in them had better find a way to help those who are poor. Because here's the other thing. The genius is like an inner gold, but if it's not given, it turns to lead. And some people are depressed because they haven't figured out how to give what is naturally in them. And what is our gift is intended to be given away. And if we don't give it, it becomes a weight inside us. And the modern word for that is depression.
Hmm. Sorry, I was looking up the Threshold Choir because I'm really excited about that. So if I'm understanding you correctly, I was only half listening, I apologize. It sounds like you're saying that when you're not living your genius, when you're not expressing that, it manifests in depression.
Well, it can. It can manifest as anger. A person can manifest as resentment. You know, you meet these people who resent everything. Oh, you know, they have it great, and we don't get anything, or I don't get anything. No one ever gave me a chance. That is usually a resentment. Part of that resentment will be that that person has not on their own, in their own terms, realized, oh, this is the kind of style I have, the kind of inner gifts, and I better be about giving them whether I get widely recognized or not. So whether it's fear or resentment or whatever it might be termed, these things are real. They are real aspects of our life, which if not given, get a kind of counterweight that becomes heavy, and it can result in depression. Or another one is cynicism. The cynic is a person who has allowed others to kind of turn their life away from where it wants to go.
Oh, that's interesting. Can we talk about that for a minute? Because I actually had a date yesterday with a guy who's like in the cynics, like society or something. And it was pretty miserable, I have to say.
I know that guy. So that comes from the Greek word kine, K-Y-N-E, which means dog. And so the old idea is, there's a whole philosophy of the cynics, which leave that aside for a moment. The original idea was that the cynic is like a dog who keeps chewing on the same bone, even though all the nutrition and all the marrow is long gone. And so it's a person has picked up a bone that they think this is what their life is about or life is about, and they keep chewing over the same stuff. It has a bitter quality, and it has a kind of a hard bone-like quality, and it's empty in a sense. So a cynic is a difficult person to deal with, but what I figured out about it is it means they somehow bypass what their real life is about, or they got stopped so cold that they lost their sense of self in a way, and all they think they have left is this kind of bitter turning of everything into something dry and bone-like. And what the cynic has to do, in a sense, is go back through the life story and find out where's the last time that the gold was shining? Where's the last occasion that could be remembered when something of meaning and beauty and joy was coming out of the person? The cynic has kind of imprisoned themselves in an area separate from their own joy, their own beauty, and their own gifts.
Okay, but Michael, isn't it, I mean, I kind of feel like it's a good idea to have a healthy dose of skepticism.
Yes.
That was the Skeptic Society, not the Cynic Society.
Is okay.
That, so, I mean, how is that different from being not just taking everything and believing everything you hear, but not being completely cynical all the time?
Well, so there's a difference between the skeptic and the cynic. And the skeptic, I forget the origin of skeptic, but it has to do with seeing clearly. And so the skeptic won't say, well, then the non-Pollyanna, they're not Pollyanna. They're not kind of painting the whole thing too bright. The skeptic understands when something dark or heavy is present. Or you could say the skeptic knows that everything has a shadow. And so whereas the cynic thinks that everything is trapped in the shadow.
Oh, okay.
So the skeptic has a balance. And that makes me think of the word wise. So the old Greek word for wisdom meant dark knowledge. And so wisdom, in a sense, is knowing not just the light, but knowing the dark and the light and how light comes out of darkness. And so to be wise is to be not cynical, but skeptical when someone is saying it's too great, you already know there's something wrong. That's proper skepticism or healthy psychological awareness. On the other hand, though, when a person is saying it's all going to hell in a handbasket, then they forgot that we're all in the eternal drama, and that the drama has its dark twists, and you could say that's where we are. We're at the end of an era, but we're secretly at the beginning of another era, and one of the tricks is not to get too cynical or too dark. On the other hand, there were people, if you think about, remember the Mayan calendars just a few months ago, and some people thought the world was just going to come to a dead end at the end of the calendar, and then some other people were saying that it's going to be a new world and everything's going to be just bright and sunny and shine and fine. And neither was the case. It's about a turn, and a turn often brushes up against the dark before it finds the light. And so a wise person can tolerate darkness and can handle the brightness too.
Oh, thank you for that. And it's been such an amazing discussion with you. And I really appreciate your time, Michael. We have just a few minutes left in the show. So while I'm doing the wrap up, maybe think about if there's anything really important that I haven't asked about yet or how you'd like to close the show. We're speaking with Michael Mead right now. He is going to be in Vancouver February 22nd and 23rd. If you're interested in seeing his evening talk or taking his Saturday workshop about finding your genius, then you can go to Banyan Books or call them for more information. And so how would you like to close the show?
Well, maybe this way. So the key thing in one's youth, in a sense, is to awaken to one's genius or the spirit that's actually already in one's life. And in the modern world, that doesn't happen partially because we no longer have rites of passage and initiation, stuff like that. It doesn't happen fully. But there is a happening, and there is a glimmer of it, even if the rest of one's life covers it over. there are several other times in life, every critical moment in life, this inner self-awareness tries to surface. And so two things. For young people, it's really helpful to them if someone is watching and paying attention carefully enough to say, oh, I just saw it. I just saw you start to shine. Mm-hmm. That confirms it in them. They can't trust it in themselves. It needs to be confirmed. And so one of the jobs of awakened adults is to help the young people when they're in the proximity of their genius. But then if you go to the other end of life, then what happens is this calling to awaken to the spirit of one's life is so important that it keeps happening until the day a person dies. So, for instance, I could imagine someone being on their deathbed, having the threshold choir singing to them, and maybe their whole life was trapped somewhere, and suddenly in that moment they actually feel and or see something they hadn't had throughout their life, but they have it at that moment, which is maybe good enough. So the calling that is calling to us is calling right to the end.
Hmm. Thank you so much, Michael. It's been such a pleasure speaking with you. And again, your website, if you want to contact Michael Mead, mosaicvoices.org. Well, it's time to wrap up the show. Coming up in just a few minutes is Parts Unknown with DJ Chris Arefic here on CITR. So stick around for that. And Michael, is there anything else you'd like to add before we say goodbye?
Well, maybe. I mean, you keep asking me. So don't be too worried about the darkness or even the trouble in the world, because inside the dark and inside the trouble are things that are both healing and kind of renewing that are trying to happen. And there's always the opportunity to sight in on those threads of meaning and attach to them.
Thank you so much, Michael. It's been
a
pleasure.
You,
have a good day. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. So again, if you want more information about his event here in Vancouver, you can go to Banyan Books, or you can check out his website, mosaicvoices.org. And if you're interested in that Threshold Choir, you can go to thresholdchoir.org. They are all over the world, so you can find if there's one near you, or maybe email them if there isn't one near you and you could start one. Okay, so this has been Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and it has been such a pleasure being here today. I hope that you have a wonderful week. Be well. I love you so much. I'm going to close the show with a song by, oh my gosh, I'm totally drawing a blank. It's Monday. So I'm just sending you my love. Have a good week. Namaste.
I listen to my favorite song, and you stand next to me. Wrap your arms around me, and I'm home. I look into your deep blue eyes, I can hardly breathe, 'cause you're here with me, and I'll never. There.
Now repeat after me. Bugger off.
Bugger off.
Sod.
Sod.
Bloody.